I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind, and I really want to hear from you, our listeners. So connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter, and please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also mean a great deal to us if you would leave a review on iTunes to help others find our show. Today, I'm pleased to welcome back Maisha Walker. Maisha was a guest on episode 165, where we talked about why you're probably reading business books all wrong. And I've asked Maisha to come back and talk a little bit more about her own personal experience besides our discussion with regard to business books, because I think she has a really fascinating entrepreneurial background, and I think you'll really enjoy our discussion. Maisha is the president of Message Medium, a digital marketing agency that helps successful brands harness the power of digital to achieve aggressive growth. As a digital pioneer, Maisha has toured the country with companies like Microsoft, Bing, JP Morgan Chase, and Capital One. She's been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneur, Black Enterprise, Fox News, and NBC News. Her feature column for Inc. became their highest trafficked blog in less than a year, and has been quoted and featured by Business Week, Guy Kawasaki, the former editor of Entrepreneur Magazine, the American Marketing Association, and even Paris Hilton. Maisha has worked with Mars Chocolate, Columbia University, Unilever, the owner of Yellowtail Wines, NBA player Kyle Lowry, Save the Children, Carlson's Vodka, Carver Bank, and many more. She has a long list of successes. And interestingly enough, Maisha started programming at the early age of 9. Maisha, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you on again.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So I think it's remarkable that you started programming at the age of 9 and then went into entrepreneurship.
Well, these days, I think the path from coding to running a business is a very common one. Obviously, when I was 9 years old, not so much. But yeah, I think of it as coming back to one of my first loves.
Right. But now, did you find that programming and running a business use similar skill sets or different ones?
Wow, that's a great question. I think they actually use very different skill sets. Coding is, there are some similarities, but coding is usually, for the most part, a very solitary experience. There are ways that you can reach out to people to get help when you're stuck and find information online about people who've faced similar challenges as you. But for the most part, it's really just you and the code and figuring out how to get something to work in the most efficient and effective way possible. That's also going to be the least hackable by other coders. So I think that the fact that coding is very solitary is actually quite opposite to, I think, the underpinnings of what it means to be a successful entrepreneur, which is really never a solitary experience. You're always working with your clients, with your customers, with their team members. And on your team, hopefully you have, array of people who are helping you to produce whatever value you're creating in the marketplace. But as you and I have spoken about before, also, hopefully you have great advisors who are helping you to make good decisions about your business.
So, it's kind of interesting that a very typical path for programmers is to become entrepreneurs, given the fact that they are there are some major differences, as you've just expressed.
Yeah, and I think that that often is, you know, now that I think about it, one of the challenges often that programmers face is really making that mental shift towards including more people in the process of programming, including more people in the process of running a business, which is something that you really do not do when you're coding. You really own a piece of code or particular elements of something that you're building, even if you're working with the rest of the team, and you have touch points where you might need to collaborate, but what you're building really is yours. And so I think that is a very different skill set. I mean, especially if you think about the sort of stereotype of a programmer being more on the introverted side, I think that for those who actually are more introverted and then try to become entrepreneurs, it's a harder skill set to learn. And, I sort of lean more towards the introverted spectrum. And so I have definitely had to learn how to be a little bit more comfortable with reaching out for help and asking questions and talking to strangers and, you know, speaking. I do a lot of speaking engagements. And so those are skills that I've really had to work very hard to build.
So talk to me a little bit about how you first realized that having a diverse set of skills as part of a team was really important, and also how you started to realize that there were skills you needed to develop as a business owner and how you went about that.
So your first question in terms of, let me make sure that I have that I understood that correctly.
The first question is about how you understood the need for a diverse team as part of your business.
Right. So I think for my particular business, so in the digital marketing area, you are automatically thinking about the wide variety of skill sets that are required in order to accomplish something. So, for example, right now we have many clients that we do a variety of kinds of work for, but there's one client that I think is a great example because we're doing a variety of work just for this one client, which includes updating the website of the business that this client owns on a regular basis, helping with email marketing, doing social media advertising, doing Google advertising, helping with search engine optimization, including link building, which often includes reaching out to other websites and business owners to see if it makes sense to include a link to our client's website. So right there, there's a variety of different skill sets that need to be leveraged in order to accomplish those tasks, which include, you know, you need a programmer in order to make some of the more complex changes to our website. We need graphic designers who are capable not only of doing website design, but also of creating graphics for Facebook ads, which are also different from Google ads. We need copywriters who are going to be great at creating advertising text to accompany those graphical ads, as well as someone who can do a good job of writing outreach emails. So those are the two very different kinds of copywriting. So I think for us, having a diverse team is incredibly important because we simply have incredibly different skill sets that are required. But it also really helps because part of what we do is absolutely about, you know, creating the value for the client is also about being creative ourselves and how we approach, you know, what it is that they're trying to accomplish. So making sure that strategically we're coming up with the best ideas and the best way of executing those ideas for the client, for our clients themselves. So having people who can approach these challenges from a variety of backgrounds and experiences and who have possibly worked in different industries, who come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, who live in different parts of the world, frankly, because we work with people from all over the world on our team, has been very valuable to us. And I think that diversity is incredibly useful in any creative process.
So the second part of the question was, once you understood the importance of having this diverse team and you started to build it, how did you realize that you needed to develop certain skills yourself as the leader that might be outside your comfort zone?
Right. So I think that while I realized, I think I realized that on a regular basis. I don't think there was, you know, a single point in time. I think I can remember the first time that happened, which, so I really started building this business in my 20s. And at the time I was working in finance at Morgan Stanley. And I do remember feeling particularly ill-equipped to handle the process of figuring out, you know, as I was debating between staying at Morgan and going out on my own and becoming a freelancer, which I then later went on to build a business out of that freelance career. When I was debating on whether or not to leave Morgan Stanley, I just realized that I was not well equipped to understand how to navigate that corporate environment and learn how to build relationships and ask questions and create sponsors and advocates of my work and for my career. I had no idea how to do that. And it was interesting realizing that that was a major gap in my education, in realizing that I was gonna need to figure that out one way or another. I ended up figuring it out as an entrepreneur, just because I felt like it was a wider playing field in which I could get that education through a variety of sources or in a variety of ways. So I felt like doing that within a corporate environment was a little too limiting for me, because the people that I would interact with would just be a much smaller number of them. But I distinctly remember realizing that when I was trying to make that decision about whether to stay in the corporate world or whether to go out on my own. Since then, in building the team, I definitely have realized in shifting from being a freelancer, where a lot of your decisions are just about which projects you're going to take on and how much you need to charge and how much time it's going to take you to get something done, and you know which networking events you're going to go to. You know, a lot of my decisions now have shifted towards, you know, building sustainable revenue sources and making sure that I'm building a team that not only can produce the work that we're delivering to clients, but also building a team that's going to enjoy working with each other, not just working with me, where there's a lot of mutual respect, you know, where we're weeding out negative elements of the team. Sometimes that just happens. You end up with a team member that just isn't a good fit for one reason or another, even if they have the skills to get the work done. Finding ways to nurture the team members and make sure that they're always feeling like they're learning in addition to their existing skill set being valued. So yeah, the challenges and the diversity of the skills that I need to have to build and grow the team are definitely different from the ones that I realized I needed simply to go out and start to get work.
You know, it's interesting. It sounds like what you're describing is going through various shift points where you've been, your dreams for the next stage in your business life has been to be in a kind of different space than you were currently in. Like going from corporate to going to becoming a freelancer, going from a freelancer to running a business, having a business to being able to scale the business in a way that provides consistent revenue sources. And that in each of these shifts, there's a place where you have to explore that you haven't been before, and it may be outside your own personal comfort zone. It may mean bringing on some new kinds of skills to your team, and you know, there are some risks associated with each shift. There are probably fears and frustrations that you might feel along the way. Am I describing this accurately?
You are spot on. Yes.
So I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what it feels when you're at that point where you know you need to jump into something new, but you're not quite sure which way to take the first step, or maybe whether, or even if you do have an idea what the right step is, you're not sure how it's actually going to turn out. And there's some risk involved.
There absolutely is. And I've heard this quote a couple of times recently, and I think it's particularly appropriate for this situation. You know, the answer to that question is, how does it feel? It's very uncomfortable because you are facing a challenge that has no right answer necessarily. There's no, you know, it's not like coding or math where it's, you know, 2 + 2 = 4 and that's the right answer. There are always many different approaches. And so it's very uncomfortable just knowing that it's something that I don't know how to do, but also knowing that there are going to be many different ways that I could do it. And you just have no idea which way is going to be the right way. But the quote that I was referring to is this idea that if as an entrepreneur, you are never uncomfortable, you're probably not doing it right. This idea that you really have to be comfortable with discomfort, because that's the way that you grow. That's the way that you push the envelope and push your business and push yourself beyond where you currently are. That if you're really comfortable, you're probably doing things the same way you always have. And that probably means you're not growing. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, at each one of those stages, it has been particularly uncomfortable and scary, as you could have guessed. But I think I have also become a lot more comfortable with that discomfort and just being confident that I'm going to find a way around it. And the way around it or through it may not look the way that I imagined it would look, but it's going to happen one way or another. I think I also, as I mentioned, have gotten a lot better. So this is one of the things I really had to learn how to do and that I feel has really helped our business during this process of scaling, is I really have learned how to be better at getting help, at asking for help, at finding advisors and mentors who are willing to, you know, who I can pick up the phone and call or send an email and say, can we get on the phone for 15 minutes tomorrow? And they'll say yes, and they'll give me great advice. I think that knowing that I have those resources available to me makes it less scary when I'm facing an area that I know nothing about or have no experience in.
Yeah. So realizing that you're not alone and that there are people who will root for you, encourage you, and give you practical advice is really important.
And give me very practical advice. And that it's advice that I respect because of where it's coming from. Their interest in me as a person, and so how much they know about me and my challenges and my successes, and also what they've accomplished in their lives. Especially the folks, most of my advisors are entrepreneurs themselves, and so they are intimately acquainted with the challenges that I'm facing.
Maisha, what has been some of the most transformational help for you in your entrepreneurial journey?
I would say, so recently, I've had, I think, a couple of scenarios where I got really great advice from somebody who really challenged me, and it was tough. I will never forget, maybe 8 years ago, I was having lunch with someone who asked me if I, just kind of off the cuff, if I had reached a certain revenue point in the growth of my business, and kind of made the assumption that I was already there. And I realized that I wasn't, but because of who this person was, the idea, who had, this woman had built you know, multi-million dollar businesses that had gotten sold and bought out by some very famous companies. And she was just this amazing person. She had had this amazing career in finance before that and had, you know, sort of broken barriers and accomplished these great things in that previous career. And she'd ask me this question. Sometimes it just takes an outside, a third party, to make a really positive assumption about where you are, to realize that, you know, there is no reason why I shouldn't be able to hit this milestone. And that was definitely a sort of life shifting moment for me, in thinking a little bigger about where my company could grow. And thinking also very carefully about what that would mean in terms of the type of business that I was building. So that was a very transformational moment for me. I think the second one that stands out the most right now is I actually pulled together an advisory board, so a formal group that meets on a regular basis. And we had our first meeting a couple of months ago, and it was really hard. They really were tough. They asked me really difficult questions and challenged me and had areas where they were concerned about how I was approaching certain things. And there were definitely moments where I had to stand my ground and say, you know, I totally respect the fact that you've asked me these questions, but, you know, I think it's a different conversation and I think I have handled that well and we can have a separate conversation about that, but let's move back to the current topic and really focus on where we're heading. And then there were other things that they raised that were just spot on. And I recently have completely shifted the focus of my time and energy. One of the things I realized is that I had been spending so many years focused on sales, and we've gotten the business now to a point where we are now bringing on people so that we can take on more work. We sort of can't take it on immediately, but we'll be able to take on more work now in a few weeks. And I realized I needed to make that shift towards focusing on my team and growing my team and really building the hiring skill set myself so that we could scale and grow. And that was incredibly transformational. And I'm just not sure if or when that would have happened had it not been for this intense meeting that I had with all these very smart, you know, brains in the room focusing on me and focusing on my business. So that was really powerful.
So getting the right kind of help is really important.
Yeah. And it's something, you know, I talk a lot about it now, especially because it's something that for many, many years, I've been in, you know, on my own for 17 years. And for many of those years, I did not get help. And so it's sort of like the zeal of the converted, you know, I'm realizing how much I may have lost as an entrepreneur by not tapping into getting other people's advice and help much, much sooner in my business.
So that being said, Maisha, what tips do you have for our audience on finding help that will be transformational for you?
So I definitely think that looking to the people who you already respect and maybe on some level already turn to for advice is a great place to start. And I was very shy about reaching out to people and asking them if they'd like to be more formally involved in my business as an advisor. But I'm glad that I sort of pushed through that fear to ask those questions, because pretty much everyone that I asked has said yes. And that has in and of itself been really rewarding, just knowing that I have people around me who are willing to help and to really devote time and energy to helping my business to be more successful. So I would definitely start with the people that you already know. I do think it's important to bring in at the right point, maybe people that are less familiar with your business and can bring an additional outside perspective. But right now, I have been really focused on people that know me and know the different areas of my life as well as my business, so that I can feel really confident about the advice that they're providing me. And my business is still small, so I think as the business grows, then I'll start looking a little bit more outside my existing network for advisors.
That's great. So in addition to what you've experienced yourself in your business, because you run a digital marketing agency and you are in a position to help other companies do better, create greater greater rate of success, etc. What do you think is most needed to help an organization smash a plateau?
Wow. I do think that, and if I'm going to be answering this question in a very general way,
what do you see over and over again?
Yeah, what I often see, especially in the digital marketing world, is people not asking the right questions. So a great example is we get a lot of businesses that approach us and say, you know, we want to grow and we need a Facebook strategy to do that. Or we want to grow and we want an email newsletter strategy, or we want a search engine optimization strategy to do that. And within, you know, a relatively short amount of time, because I've just been doing this for a really long time, so I can spot things very quickly, we discover that, you know, the Facebook strategy that they came to us wanting was the wrong question. And really, for a lot of businesses, one of the main things that they're missing is having a better understanding of who it is that they should be speaking to. So who is your target audience, really? Mm-hmm. And what's the best way to reach that audience? And so a lot of times, what we end up doing is helping them really rethink who that audience is, or sending them to someone who specializes in that, and then coming back and saying, all right, now that we know who you need to speak to, let's come up with the appropriate strategy, which may or may not include Facebook, for how to reach that audience in a way that's authentic and efficient and effective for the kind of business and the kind of services or products that you offer. So I think just making sure that you're really asking the right question, that you're approaching whatever your challenge is, whatever it is you're trying to smash through. I think often we can get kind of stuck in thinking that the question is one thing or that the challenge is one thing, when actually if we take several steps back and approach it from a very different perspective, we realize that what we're facing is something entirely different from what it seemed like on the surface. So that would be my general answer, is just make sure that you're asking the right question.
Right. So just go back to basics and understand what you're trying to accomplish and why.
Yeah. And I think sometimes you can get really locked into, I think even saying what is it that you're trying to accomplish can get too specific, right? So thinking about, well, I'm trying to launch this new brand, or I'm trying to launch this new product, or I'm trying to launch this series of events. Well, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't be doing a series of events in the first place. Maybe if you're having trouble getting those launched, it's because you don't have the right infrastructure to get that done. And so the question, how do I launch this series of events, is the wrong question. You sort of have to take a step back and say, well, why am I trying to launch this series of events? And once you get to the why, sometimes that will get you at what the better question is for you to be asking.
Yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. Maisha, how have you created success for yourself while staying true to your mission?
Wow. Can you tell me a little bit more about where you're going with that question?
Sure. Often, particularly as you go through these shift points in your business life, if you look at your sort of guiding purpose in why you're doing what you're doing, you're trying to make an improvement in other people's lives, your customers and your audience. And in some cases, business owners have a very kind of grand mission that they're trying to accomplish in life.
Yes.
And when you get stuck with, well, I've got to make sure I can meet payroll this week, or this subcontractor has to get paid, and did I send out all the invoices so that our receivables are the bare minimum? You know, dealing with cash flow issues, or you're dealing with loss of a critical team member due to perhaps an illness or some other event. Sometimes you get you get really bogged down in the day-to-day and fighting fires and putting out fires, and you kind of lose track of why you're doing what you're doing, and you could end up making decisions that distract you from your overall mission. So I'm wondering how you manage to always kind of keep that mission in focus as you're going through the day-to-day, going through these bigger shift points, getting out of your comfort zone, and still at the same time creating success for yourself and others who are involved in your business.
Wow, that is a great question too. So there are a couple of times when I have faced that head on and had to make, again, transformative decisions in my business. So one of the earlier ones was, I am very passionate about leveling, to the extent that I can, the playing field in terms of education. So helping people to understand how digital marketing works, you know, the situations in which it's helpful, the situations in which it isn't. And in the earlier stages of my career, as a digital marketing expert, I really was drawn to working with businesses who were really, really small and very early stage, because I felt that those were the business owners who really needed the most help. And I also was excited about working with business owners who maybe didn't have access to some of the resources that I had, or maybe, you know, hadn't, for example, gone to college. And so maybe they didn't have this whole great network of alumni from the schools that they could turn to for questions and help, or whatever it was, people who had challenges even beyond just the big challenge of running a business, and maybe didn't have access to the information that they needed that was going to help them to grow and be successful. What I realized was that while I was very passionate about helping and educating people and working with that group, that very often those businesses actually needed too much help in too many areas and were not quite at the stage in their business evolution where it actually made a lot of sense for them to spend money on the kind of help that we could give them. Or the kind of help that I wanted to give them, let's say. So it was hard, but I really had to make a decision to separate out a part of that passion from, you know, focusing on that passion from focusing on my revenue and where my revenue was going to come from. And how could I then kind of rematch what I was passionate about with what's going to be sustainable from a business perspective. So nowadays, I still am able to connect with that audience that needs a lot of help, but instead of bringing them on as clients, which isn't a good fit for them, it isn't a good fit for us, I usually do a lot of speaking engagements. And very often, you know, sometimes those speaking engagements are paid. Sometimes, you know, there are events that I produce where the attendees pay to come for the event. And sometimes they're free, like the events that I'm doing with the New York Public Library. And so I have this outlet for that passion for helping to educate people about the power of digital and how much it can be helpful if you really know how to use it. And I can separate that from building my business, in which we work with businesses that are bigger, a little bit bigger and larger, and have sustainable revenue sources themselves, and with whom we can really partner and become sort of an outsourced digital marketing team for them. You really can't do that with a business that is too small. It just doesn't, the numbers don't work. They don't add up. So that was a very early kind of shift that I had to make to find a way to make sure that I felt that I was really authentic in staying true to this passion about educating people, but also making sure that I had a viable business model. And I feel really great about how we've been able to do that.
Right. So you've been able to do both.
We've been able to do both. Exactly. And I, at the same time, there was a year when I spoke at almost 100 events in a single year. It was completely insane. I was speaking like every 3 days and sometimes more than once a day. That was a turning point for me also. I mean, I got a lot of great experience out of doing that many speaking engagements all packed into a single year. And it really helped me to hone my speaking abilities, but it was definitely too much. And I realized that I was not generating the kind of business that I thought I would be generating from doing that much speaking. I think that was a real turning point for us in making this decision about how to separate the passion for speaking from and educating from the passion for building a sustainable business. And so even though I speak a lot less now, I have become a lot more strategic about when and how and where I speak and on what topics, and finding the right combination of speaking for audiences that really just need a lot of information and help, in addition to speaking for audiences that who are actual potential clients, you know, candidates for becoming a client for my business.
That's actually a great example of where your personal passion and business viability intersect and where they don't, and how you can channel your passion to fulfill both. So thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome. And I think it's something I've found that a lot of entrepreneurs have faced. You know, they have this burning, you know, need to do something in the world. And sometimes their desire to make an impact, parts of that can be at odds with a sustainable business model. And so I do think it's really important that people sit down and try to parse that out and make sure that you're making the right decisions for growing your business. And it doesn't have to be at odds with what you want to do just as a human being and sort of a citizen of the world, that you can find ways to separate those and still be true to the core of what it is that you want to contribute to the world.
That's great. That's great. So speaking of your business, Maisha, what are you working on now that you're most excited about?
So I think the thing that I'm still most excited about, well, two things. One is we have this series of events that I mentioned with the New York Public Library, where we're focusing on specific areas of digital marketing. So we did an event just last night, actually, on search engine optimization, which was very successful. We also have done an event on email marketing. And the first event in this series was on social media advertising. So we have two more events coming up in the fall, one about search engine advertising. And then the last event is about digital analytics, Google Analytics, how to really leverage your analytics to help you invest your digital marketing budget a lot more effectively. And I'm just excited to be able to partner with the library on this series. We had about 100 people who came out to the event last night, which was really exciting.
That's awesome.
And I'm just thrilled. Like I said, this is one of the areas of passion for me, to be able to share this information with people and help them learn how to leverage these tools. So I'm just very excited about that, and looking forward to seeing lots of people come out for the events that are going to happen in the fall. So that's the thing that I'm most excited about right now. I am also excited, just on a more personal business level, that we're growing our team. You know, we have been very successful over the last couple of years in shifting our business model and working with companies who bring us on really as an outsourced digital marketing team to work with them on an ongoing basis. And it's really allowed us to also grow our team to help provide those services. And I just want to give a shout out to the people on my team who are really doing a fantastic job. We just had a new project manager join us yesterday, and she's already kind of grabbing the bull by the horns. And so I'm just really proud of how we've been able to pull our team together, and excited for the skills that I'm learning as well in growing this team. So that's been an amazing journey for me too.
That's great. Maisha, how can listeners learn more about you and your team?
So the best way is to visit our website, which is messagemedium.com. So it's message, like a voicemail message, and then medium as in small, medium, and large.com. I have upcoming events, like the ones that I mentioned for the fall, are all listed. I'm also always doing events, usually once or twice a month I speak somewhere. So those events are all listed on our website. You can also look at past events. I have a lot of great articles that I've written that are posted there. So if people are looking to learn about digital marketing, they can get access to those on our website. And also, of course, join our email list. If you want me to notify you when we have an event coming up or a new piece of content or a cool checklist that'll be useful for you, joining our email list is the best way to do that.
Yeah, that's great. So, Maisha, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Maisha Walker, president of Message Medium. Thank you again, Maisha, for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. What has your experience been getting help when you've hit a plateau? What would you like to learn through this podcast that would give you the support you need? Let's continue the discussion. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter. And please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious. I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.